From the studios in Eugene, Oregon, it's Oregon Update with your hosts, Cliff and Robin. You can join Cliff and Robin by dialing 646-721-9887 or by email at talk@krbnradio.com. And now, here's your hosts, Cliff and Robin.
From Eugene and Cottage Grove, unless, of course, you are listening to it on the archive, in which case, it's your loss. It's Cliff and Robin with me, Robin, and there, Cliff.
It's hey, definitely, we're much better alive than we are dead.
Well, yeah. Welcome to the Dead Show. We will spend an hour and a half of total silence.
Okay. Well, interestingly enough, this last... Lots of things to talk about. I don't know what any of them are, but I'm sure there must be lots of things to talk about. The only thing I've come up with so far is, well, I'll let you go ahead and start the show, and then I'll get into my.
Okay. Well, before we get in there, let's do what's traditionally what they do in talk radio, and that is instead of just totally talking between Cliff and I, which we can do any time without your involvement... But in this case, we'd like to have your involvement. And to do that, you can give us a call right now at 646-721-9887.
That's 646-721-9887.
Okay, let me be sure I got that. All right, so it's 646. Okay.
721.
All right.
9887.
9887.
That's easy to remember.
Okay. And what happens when I dial that number?
You'll get a couple of people talking to each other. That's us. And you'll hear that noise, and you can listen to that, and you can just sit there and listen to that if you want to. Or you can dial, what is it, 1 and interrupt us and let us know that you want to talk to us.
Exactly. And it'll come up on my board, and I'll say, welcome area code so-and-so to the program, and you can join the conversation. It's easy and addicting, too, actually, 646-721-9887.
You do all of this on a board? I have a screen.
Well, it's... They can also, by the way, if you are too shy, you can join us right now in the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/KRBN. Unfortunately, you do not have to have a Blog Talk Radio account because you'll come up as guest. But if you'd like to participate in the conversation, you do need a Blog Talk Radio account, which is free, by the way, which means no charge, in case you didn't know. And but otherwise, you know, you just have
to... I suppose they have to fill out some sort of a form.
Actually, it's real simple. You just give yourself a username and go for it.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, no fuss, no muss. Other than that, if you happen to be one of the thousands of people that listen to us on the archives every week, you can still participate kind of late. Shame on you for not being here live, by sending us an email, talk@krbnradio.com. And we're kind of...
Yep, you know, that's okay, though, because if you want to send an email, you can do that sort of anonymously. And you can send us an email, and we can answer questions, and you don't have to say who you are or what you're... Or anything like that. So that would be a way that people might want to talk to us.
Exactly. Or if you see something in the news that you'd like us to talk about, send us an email, and we won't mention your name on the air unless you really want us to. You can also join us on Facebook. We're kind of a little behind in catching up on that, but that's because we don't get paid for doing this. So, you know, we have lives and other jobs and that type of stuff. So, but we're doing this because, one, we have nothing better to do. Two, because we want you to participate in what we're talking about.
I think basically it started out we had nothing better to do, but now we have this and something better to do.
I think it really started out because somebody that I know, meaning you, who spent a lifetime in radio and offered me a job on terrestrial, but I was too chicken to do it, actually came up with this idea about, hey, why don't we go and follow the 21st century and do internet radio, and now that you got me hooked on a microphone.
I tell you, internet radio is neat. I mean, there's so many things you can do on it.
And there's a lot of advantages, too. Like, for one thing, the, what do they call it, for equal time on politicians type of thing?
equal time. Don't we have to do that?
No, we don't have to do that. So
I want to do it anyway.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if we're going to give somebody time, if somebody else wants it, I think we should offer it to them.
Yeah. Well, we've invited people to come on. We have had one of the candidates running for U.S. Senate who's been on several times, and we have an open invitation to others that like to come on, including try and set up a debate. But apparently some people still feel that Internet radio isn't worth their time and effort, which is...
They'll find out. Definitely.
But,
I mean, Internet radio is the thing. It's what's happening. And it's not just because it's an in thing. It's because it is the thing that's going on right now. I mean, let's face it, there's, I don't know, not much of anything else happening.
Yeah.
Radio is kind of an, you know, we call it Internet radio, but it could be Internet anything, because you can do voice, you can do audio, you can do video, you can do all kinds of things on it, and it all works.
Well, plus the fact we have a little bit more freedom than terrestrial radio. Like, for example, you know, if you wanted, I'm not going to compare us to Rush Limbaugh, but if you wanted to call the Rush Limbaugh show, good luck getting on. And even then, you're limited to however, you know, just 1 or 2 minutes or whatever. Same thing with a lot of local talk shows where, you know, on a point like this, we have more control over what happens. We've known to bring guests on. Somebody calls in. We've actually had them on during the whole show because the conversation was good enough to keep them there. And
now, the 1 or 2 minutes and that whole limitation on standard radio, that's the host's rules. That's not just radio rules.
No, but that's typically radio. What's going on because some, depending on the host, some networks like to – they want to get people on, and even if they've got a really great topic going, good conversation, you hear a little bell in the background, okay, done, you're done. But, yeah, you're right. It is up to the discretion of the host. But what I'm trying to say is that we have a little bit more flexibility here on Blog Talk Radio than a lot of terrestrial stuff, and we do reach around the world, and we have had people from all over the U.S. give us a call at 646-721-9887.
That's the thing that I think is neat. Really, really neat. We can get calls from anywhere.
We've got calls outside of the U.S. too, which is kind of neat. And even more so, what I always love about receiving calls from people outside of the United States is asking them about what have you heard about what's going on in the U.S. compared to what we're told being in the U.S. And a lot of times it's always different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it's always kind of fascinating, and, you know, it is kind of neat to reach out. And it also kind of, like I was referring back to, like, when Cliff offered me a job over in Cottage Grove on a Saturday program, and I chickened out. You know, and this is just local community. Here we're talking worldwide. I mean, talk about giving up your wallflower status.
but it's good for you.
It is good for me. And speaking of, we do, like Cliff says, we do have several things on the docket that we want to touch on, but if there's something you'd like to touch on, again, we've been known to change directions, and we're just the topics we bring up is just stuff that, you know, suggestions. It's not written in stone, which is really hard to do. It makes a lot of big mess, anyways. But you know,
we've got another person who opened fire on people. This is at Fort Hood, and a soldier, and I don't understand these people. We have more and more people that are shooting people now, and it's got to be more than just the fact that we're noticing it more or we're reporting on it more. It's actually happening more because, and what's wrong with people? We've got a problem in our society of some sort because this guy, he was, I don't know. There's no reason for people to shoot people. I mean, especially since, you know, I could say, okay, there is a reason to shoot people. I could go out and shoot 2 or 3 people because I'm mad at them and I don't like them and all that sort of thing. But then that's stupid if I go ahead and shoot myself afterwards. I mean, that's just the most insane thing that I've ever heard of, is to shoot people and then shoot yourself in the head afterwards and kill yourself because you've accomplished virtually nothing. Nothing. And why bother? you know, and so why bother hurting the other people? Why not, you know, if you want to do something like that, just go out and shoot yourself. You know, that's okay. All right, nobody's going to bother you, and nobody's going to care, probably. Somebody will. Somebody will be upset, but I'm sure your mom or your dad or brothers or sisters or loved ones. But I'm not going to care if you want to go out and shoot yourself, no matter who you are.
Right.
I mean, it just doesn't make any sense, however, to shoot somebody else, and then go out and shoot yourself. That's just insane. And I mean, but this guy did that. He shot how many people here? I made a mistake. I brought a Diet Coke to drink, and now I'm going to be voted off during the show.
Thank you for saying that.
I don't know. He killed three soldiers, and then killed himself, and he wounded 16 others. I mean, this guy just went bananas. He went ape. And what's going on with people that they do this sort of thing? There's no logic for something like that I can see. And they can, well, in this particular case, they can't go after him with a shrink because he's dead.
Well, actually, they're saying here that what caused it is that he was giving, see, I'm scanning the thing here, so we're reading in my fast, slow-speed internet, is that he was denied, I think, a leave paper, and he went ballistic, literally.
I was denied leave papers. I mean, I didn't do nothing. I mean, that doesn't, you know, because you're denied leave papers, that doesn't even mean anything. You can go back again and ask for them again, and the next time it might be given to you. And that's just ridiculous.
It says here, the soldier who opened fire at Fort Hood became enraged after an employee wouldn't give him a leave of absence form, according to the father of one of the soldiers that he shot. So, but again, now here's the thing is that, you know, that, and I'm waiting for, if it hasn't come out already, that, you know, you got somebody that's mentally unbalanced, you know, now they're going to say, well, you know, we need to tighten gun controls and we need to have, I've heard these shows where we need to have, you know, gun-free zones. It's like, and then when there's actually a shooting in the gun-free zone, quote-unquote, they're going, how the hell could that happen? This is a gun-free zone. Yeah, you go tell gang members that, you know, sorry, guys, you know, but this block here, it's gun-free. You know, you can't bring your weapons in. You have to, if you're going to shoot somebody, you got to bring bottles.
There's no way that anybody knows if you're carrying a weapon because you don't have to have it in sight. You don't have to be, you know, you don't have to have it strapped to your waist and carrying it around like a 6-10 and like a 6-gun in the olden days, that you can put it in your purse, you can put it in a suitcase, you can put it in a briefcase, you can have it in your pocket so it's not noticeable. Guns can be small, and, you know, little tiny guns, little .22-caliber guns can be very small, but they can kill you just as dead.
Oh, yeah.
That's a ridiculous thing. They can be small and kill you real, real dead. And so, consequently, it's just ridiculous to think that there's you can even to even think of some place as a gun-free zone is sort of ridiculous because it's not, you know. I actually lived in California, but I did right on the border with Arizona, and I found it quite interesting. I went to a ball game. We did a ball game at the radio station, and people came in with 6 guns strapped to their waist. I mean, a lot of them. We must have. We probably had 600 people at the ball game, and probably 200 of them were armed. But they were armed, and it was showing. You could see it. It was no big thing. Nobody worried about it. And so it really doesn't make any difference if it's a gun-free zone or not. It really makes no difference. I mean, it's you're not just as liable to get shot in a gun-free zone as you are not.
Right.
So it's just ridiculous to even designate.
If you look at the schools, you can get in trouble for a loaded Pop-Tart.
That's true. That's sad, but that's true. You know, and that's fairly new too because all of my Pop-Tarts were loaded. when I went to school. I don't think we even need pop charts
when
I went to school.
One of the questions that came up, speaking about the military, because you would think that, military, guns, big guns, guns that you're not legally supposed to have. You know, you think that, who's going to do something stupid with a gun in the military, especially on a base, because, it's like walking into a bar that where police mainly hang out, and try to hold it up. You're going to expect a whole bunch of guns pointing in your direction if you're that stupid to try it.
Yeah.
But one of the things that, and I'm kind of scanning over one of the, who wrote this, Washington Post put out an article, says, here are the rules on carrying firearms on Fort Hood. Because apparently the soldiers in all military installations, this is according to the Washington Post, including Fort Hood, are not armed while on post, nor are they permitted to carry any privately owned firearms. Only law enforcement and security personnel are allowed to have weapons on the post. So that's one of the reasons why it took a little longer, because they had to have the police show up instead of somebody running over to the firearms locker, or however it's while you were in the military. Where did they put the weapons?
When I was in the military, they're in my locker. I mean, we didn't put them away in any specific place. It was a long time ago. I've got to consider I'm old. But we didn't have weapons. Were not even released to us. They didn't give us weapons until we went out to train, what they call train fire. And then we went up and signed out the weapon that we needed to use and went out and fired it and then signed it back in.
Yeah.
I mean, we didn't have weapons. They weren't given to us. We just didn't have them to carry around. And, of course, I see when you mentioned that story to me before, I was a little weird, but because you didn't mention the fact that these were private weapons. Never on a military base are you allowed to bring your own private weapon.
Well, even here it says that soldiers who live on the post must let their immediate commanders know if they have a personal firearm, of course, and says all losses, et cetera. It says no concealed weapons are allowed, even with a state or county permit.
Right. It doesn't make any difference.
But it doesn't say in here that is it common for military personnel to always wear their sidearms?
Oh, well, no, because, like I say, you're not given the sidearms. I mean, you're when you go out to fire your weapon, you sign the weapon out and then you fire it and then you sign it back in. You're not allowed to have a weapon on the base, just as a standard procedure. I mean, not yours, whether or a military weapon, either one. You're not allowed to have them. It's just not something that's done.
Right.
So you know if you have a weapon, again, like I said before, you can tell people you can't do that. But you can't make them not do it.
Well, and that's the point. In fact, the Washington Post has a copy of the official orders regarding the rules on firearms at Fort Hood, and they're saying for the for safety, et cetera, you're not allowed to wear firearms. But again, these people are trained to handle weapons. And like I said earlier, they're trained to handle things that civilians aren't even allowed to own. And you would think that, well, okay, fine. You have guns. You know how to use them. And would things have been different if people had commonly carried weapons on this base or any base for that matter?
Well, the only time we were ever allowed to carry a weapon when we were not actually firing a weapon was when we came back from firing our weapon and we had to clean it.
Right.
So we did take it to our barracks sometimes. And because I remember cleaning my weapon, and I took it in the shower with me, because what better way to clean it than in the shower?
You were really close to your weapon.
Actually, I wasn't at all. But it was the easiest way to clean it. And I wasn't, as fastest. And I went in and cleaned it, and then we turned it in. But, I mean, you just didn't have a weapon, any weapon. I mean, when I say I took my weapon, and the weapon I had was not mine specifically. We didn't have any weapons assigned to us or given to us or anything like that. It was just the weapon that I used that day I took and cleaned. And everybody had to do that. But, you know, it's nobody thought about using it on anybody because, first of all, you didn't have any ammunition for it. Second of all, you didn't want to use it because it would get dirty again and you have to clean it again.
Right.
So that's the pain in the butt.
Well, most of the comments on here is what they call POFs, a personally owned firearms. But again, like you're saying, since you were in the service, and if anybody else was in the service would like to comment as well, especially, you know, if they've been in the service more recent, about the rules of carrying, you know, even issued firearms, sidearms, while on the base. I guess that's basically the, like they said, security, military police are the ones that most commonly are always carrying their sidearms, right?
Well, they're using them. You know, they've got a use for them. I mean, if I was a, even back then, if I was a military police or something like that, I would be issued a weapon, and I would, again, it was my weapon as long as I was using it. And of course, it was my weapon to clean, of course, the whoopee. But that's the thing is, that's a different story. A policeman or something like that, but just standard military personnel, you aren't issued a weapon at all. The only and when you are issued a weapon, it's for a specific purpose. It's for a specific time. It's for a specific date, and then you use that weapon in that particular circumstance, and then you get to clean that weapon, whoopee, and then you get to turn it in. That's all there is to it. And it's not even the same weapon every time. You never know whose weapon you're going to get to use or what weapon you're going to get to use.
Well, let's take it a step further. I mean, besides the fact of a rogue soldier or something, okay, you're a foreign country, and you don't like us. And now we're bragging about, let me read this paragraph, soldiers in all military installations, including Fort Hood, are not armed while on post, nor are they permitted to carry any privately owned firearms. Only law enforcement and security personnel are allowed to have weapons on post.
Right.
Okay. Let's just say, for the sake of argument, that you want to be an invasion force, and one of the primary targets, of course, would be, you know, your military installations. Well, you're going to go and know that these guys, except for security, is not armed, and so you're going to have this. Okay, let's take this scenario based on your experience. If there's an attack in the base, how long outside of security and police, you know, that are normally carrying their sidearms, how long would it take for an individual or a group of individuals to go grab a weapon to fire back?
I guess I would say, how were we attacked? I mean, was this by a bunch of people or a person or?
Okay.
Because you can't go grab a weapon. You'd have to go sign in for it, and you'd have to go convince somebody to open the locker. And I mean, it would be for a long time. It'd be 20 minutes before you got a weapon.
Okay. The gates are stormed. Okay. You know, the front gates are stormed. You've got a group of 30 people coming through the front gates right now, through the side gates or whatever, that are attacking the fort on foot.
Yeah.
Okay. Other than outside of, you know, again, the police, military police and security personnel, how else would that fort be defended because everybody else in there is not armed? How long would it take them, roughly, to go, you know, like, excuse me, Sergeant, we're being invaded. Can I, like, check out a weapon?
And unless it was more than you that told the sergeant that it was being invaded, you couldn't. I mean, they'd have to know for sure because you went and asked for a weapon to check it out, or there's just no checking out a weapon, just not done. If we were invaded by I don't know what kind of a force, but if we were invaded by a force, the military police would let everybody know and as well as they would let everybody, all the other military police, know, because they're the only ones who have the word. And then at that point, when they let somebody know, then we as just military personnel would be told to come and get weapons. But, I mean, it would be a very regulated thing, and it would take a long time, to be honest with you. A person, that would be actually one of the easiest places to, if you wanted to storm a place and kill a lot of people, that would probably be the easiest place to do it.
So our mighty military is basically vulnerable to whatever percentage of military police and security happen to be on the post. I don't know what the ratio is, but so if a group of people decide they wanted to take over, say, Fort Hood or whatever fort, and for whatever weapons they have stored on those forts, because I'm assuming that they have some really nasty stuff typically out of...
Well, they wouldn't be able to get to those. They wouldn't be able to get to the military, to the weapons, period. I mean, the weapons are guarded, and they are not, you know, you wouldn't be able to get to the weapons themselves if that's what you wanted to storm the base for, is to get the weapons. You could kill some people, perhaps, but you wouldn't be able to get to more weapons.
Okay. Because, again, do you have a whole bunch of people guarding them at one time that are armed, or just a couple people? Or?
I would say the circumstances per which the weapons are stored, they've got enough people to maybe 30 people. They could hold off 30 people with no trouble. Much more than that, and they might not be able to.
Right.
But even then, they're locked up. I mean, it would be very, very hard to storm a military base and get weapons. And by the time they were onto the military base and in a position to break in to get more weapons, they would have armed the rest of the people and stopped them. I mean,
so the other people that would, at that point, that would have gone in and, Sergeant, we're being invaded. Oh, yeah, sure. Okay, sign this out. You know, here's your weapon. By that time, it's too late.
Yep. Yeah, it wouldn't take too long to get to the people to arm everyone there. So if it was a group of people that broke onto the base or broke on, first of all,
it wouldn't be like in the movies where we're invaded, ding 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 ding, and then there's somebody handing out weapons to anybody that's going along in the line.
Well, it's not that easy to do, and it depends on what kind of a base it is. Yeah, I was. I don't want to say this. I was kind of special because I was...
You're special.
I was military intelligence. And so the bases that I was on were very well armed and very well protected. So the base that I was on had three fences with dogs and armed people going between the fences. So you couldn't get on it easy. It wasn't an easy thing to do to break onto that base. The only place you could do it would be if you had 30 or 40 people and you stormed the gate.
So it kind of looked like Starlock 13.
Yeah, exactly.
And,
it did.
In which case, was no problem for Colonel Hogan.
Well, he didn't have to break in. He was breaking out. And so that's easier. No. But, no, it's true. You're not going to get on the base easy. Now, I don't know about other bases because I wasn't there, but the bases that I was on were very well armed and very well controlled. And as far as the main gate is concerned, getting into the main gate, that was not necessarily, it wasn't guarded by a whole lot of people,
right.
But it was strategically built so that you couldn't get in. And so it was not easy to do. So your 30 people that you had storming the base would have been kept very busy just getting into the base and probably not gotten anywhere once they got there.
Yeah, but you're saying that you know, that a place where there's a lot of military intelligence, you know, higher class worth protecting people, but it sounds like a regular military base, you know, 10 people and a microbus and a guy with a moped could come in quite easily and take over.
Well, see, I don't know about that. I don't know what the regular military would be like. The basis that I, well, The only time I was on other bases was when I was in the hospital and a couple other times, and they were not protected at all that I could see. Right. But then they were probably not where people would break in, because they were, you know, it wasn't out in the middle of an area where there was lots of armed people roaming around. I mean, you know, the city itself just doesn't usually have that many people running around with weapons.
It's kind of interesting. And again, if you have any thoughts on this or would like to contribute, 646-721-9887. And again, we're not limited to the topics we bring up. If you have something you'd like to talk about, again, don't hesitate to give us a call, 646-721-9887. I have to throw that in, you know.
Yeah, if you want to change the subject, we'll do it. But if you want to stick with our subject, we're more than happy to talk to you about that, too.
Yes, that's why they call it talk show, and why we are not singing, thank God.
Thank God, yes. The two of us singing, forget it.
Or maybe we should. If you want to stop singing, call us.
That's where we get the people with the weapons. For sure.
646-721-9887. It is food for thought. But, you know, again, waiting for the... I'm sure it's already started, you know, oh, my God, how are we going to keep people that are mentally deranged from getting weapons? Well,
that's, the thing is, one of the things we've got to consider, we've got to do something about, you know, you're speaking of people mentally deranged. We need to have a place for people mentally deranged.
Yeah, we do. The White House.
What? Oh, the White House. Well, see, all of the places we had for mentally deranged people have been closed. They've closed them down, and that's a problem. They're we don't have places for them. I used to live in a place. Cedar Valley is the city, but there was a huge. I mean, there was I don't want to call it a base, but it was. It was the size of the city. The city was what? 4,000, 5,000 people, something like that, and there was that many people on this particular base but they closed it down totally. And it had mentally deranged people, and in most of the instances, they just turned them loose. They just set them out. Now, if there were really, you know, there were a few of them that were absolutely dangerous to themselves and to others, and they did find another place for them, but I mean, the majority of them, they just closed down. And that wasn't the only place that did that. It was a lot of places that did that just closed down. And it was a great big one near Tacoma. And they were huge buildings. And they were nice-looking buildings. They were in good shape and everything. But they just closed them down and closed them up and stopped using them. And all these people were just turned loose. Well, I don't know who made the decision to do that. And who decided who was going to get to go and who was not, but they really blew it. And so we've got an awful lot of, I don't want to call everybody mentally deranged, but they are, people that are just out running loose, so to speak, because of that. And I'm talking about millions, not just hundreds. We're talking about a couple thousand in each one of these places, and there must have been a couple of thousand of these places. I mean, this was a huge big thing, and this happened quite a while ago, and since then we have not been putting them away. We've just supposedly we've been fixing them with drugs, and we can give them a drug and that'll take care of them, except that only works if they take them. That only works if they use the drugs, and not everybody does. And, you know, they may be given the drug and they may go after him and all that sort of thing, but that doesn't mean they're going to take him and use them. So we've got an awful lot of people that are not mentally prepared for life. And that must be why we've got so many shooters now more than we did before, because we're seeing the response to that. We're seeing the result of that.
Well, let me throw one other thing out there, too, that the country is really in sad shape right now. I mean, we got the, well, between the economy, we got Obamacare, which is changing what a 40-hour work week is because of the added cost to it. We're requiring citizens that unless you are actually in the poverty level to purchase health care, whether you can afford it or not, or pay the penalty, which stacks up every year, and you know at some point the IRS is going to come down on you if you don't pay it. And businesses are, well, I'll give you an example. It's like you even to start a business, which is very costly in this economy anyways, between permits and liability and just and typically it's not uncommon for a business owner to go without a paycheck for a long time because, you know, everything is going into the business. And now you're immediately having to throw insurance costs on top of that. If you have employees, you got to provide insurance for them. It was just very expensive. And so people are feeling more trapped and hopeless and, you know, and it's making harder, you know, it's harder and harder to meet. So it's I guess where I'm going with that, it's like a mouse stuck in a maze that after a while, you know, you go stir crazy because you feel hopeless and people deal with it different ways. And some people, you know, they want to commit suicide because they can't take it anymore, but they don't have the guts to just go somewhere quietly and blow their brains out. They have to, you know, do like the Fort Hood thing and go out and take other people with them and have somebody else blow their head off.
Well, actually this guy didn't, he did blow his own head off, I thought. But the thing is, you're right. A lot of people want someone else to kill them, and so they'll go out and do something to see to it that someone else will get to them. That's, you know, suicide by cop or something.
Yeah, but, it was technically called, yeah.
But the thing is, even more than that, we've got an awful lot of people that I think should be in a hospital, and they're not. And that's what I'm thinking is happening here. Perhaps we had more people in the hospitals than should have been before, but to just willy-nilly turn them all loose, that was not the answer either.
Yeah.
But that's what we did. So.
And speaking of hospitals, let me go ahead and change the subject a little bit and segue into the Obamacare thing. There's something I want to touch on, which I thought, when I saw the headline here, I thought was just funny as hell. And, of course, Anning and I have a weird sense of humor. And that was the train wreck, otherwise known as the Affordable Care Act, otherwise known as Obamacare, supposedly has reached over 7 million sign-ups. And President Obama's been jumping up and down for joy, going, hey, look at this, it's working. And so the White House officials sought out to get some time on prime time, which, you know, is very expensive for one, because that's what makes the networks money. If anybody still has a TV set to watch them, and so the president could have time to go, hey, look at me, it's working, kind of a thing. And the network said, we don't think so. So so after the networks refused to allow time for Obama to come on and brag about his accomplishments, including killing Osama bin Laden, which of course we have big proof of that. He wound up on, decided to do daytime television like Ellen and other daytime shows that nobody watches.
Well, the thing is, the idea of asking for prime time, he's had that quite a bit. He's had a lot of prime time given to him lately, and to want more and more and more. This is not what our society is all about. I mean,
superstar.
No, he's not. He's not even a star. He doesn't have any idea what a superstar should do, and he is not entertaining in any way, shape, or form. I've seen all of these speeches that he's supposedly given,
right?
And I'm not impressed with any of them, not a single one of them. And I am one who I usually do watch the president's talks, but he's not saying anything new. He's just going over and over and trying to take credit for absolutely everything, and things where he's not even there, he's trying to take credit for.
Yeah.
And consequently, It's just ridiculous. And so consequently, I don't blame them for not wanting to give him the time to go on the air, and just he doesn't have anything to say. And so consequently, it's time to quit. And so it's just as if, you know, the thing is, I understand what the networks are doing.
Right.
The networks are allowing him to go on one of your daytime shows. And if he does actually come up with something to say, then they'll put him on at night, put him on in prime time. But he hasn't made any attempt. He doesn't have anything to say. And so consequently, I don't blame him for keeping him off.
And he won't take questions at any of his speeches. In fact, half the time he doesn't even show up for his briefings. But anyways, one of the things that he wanted to deliver, one of the speeches, is that he wanted to celebrate more than 7 million enrollees with an evening announcement. However, the Obama delivered a celebratory message from the Rose Garden on Tuesday at 4:15 p.m., and he says, "In the first 6 months, we've taken a big step forward," he told supporters. "The lengths to which people have gone to scare people," which he's talking about against Obamacare, he says, "I don't get it. Why are people working so hard for people not to have health insurance? Why are they so mad about the idea of folks having health insurance?" He wondered about the opposition to his plan. Well, again, it gets back to even his argument back in 2008 when he was debating Hillary Clinton. He says, "For making a law forcing people to have health insurance is not the answer." He says, "You wind up people that can't afford insurance, forcing them to pay the penalty and still not having health insurance." And that's exactly what we got. And then the argument is, well, why would you not have somebody have health insurance? Well, again, do the math. One of the arguments is that people, you know, if you're making minimum wage and, you know, let's say you take home just say $1,500 a month, you know, you're lucky enough to full time minimum wage, and your rent is $700-$800 a month. And Obama argues that you need to manage your money better. This is what he's saying. You know, get rid of your cell phone, get rid of your cable, you know, little luxuries of life, as they call it. Well, that's a necessity for a lot of people. You got to have, maybe you don't have to have a real fancy smartphone, but, you know, cable or internet is, phones and internet are pretty much a necessity nowadays. So, okay, so you got $100 there, $700 for rent. So you're up to $800, $200 for utilities, because every 60% of that bill is taxes. So what are we up to now, Cliff? About $1,000.
Yeah.
And if you have a food budget of $10 a day, which isn't much food, that's $300 a month. Okay, then let's talk about, you have a very small wardrobe because you shop at Goodwill or St. Vincent's or whatever. And so basically you spent your whole paycheck, and now they want you to spend $300, $400, $500 a month on health care. Mathematically, you know, you just can't say, okay, fine. Well, yeah, I understand. I need health insurance. Give it to me. Oh, got to pay for it? I don't have the money. Where's it? Well, just get the money. Where? Where's the money come from? And see, that's, you know, his argument about why people working so hard not to have health insurance. Everybody would love to have health insurance. There's examples around the world of ways that the countries are providing health insurance that works without bankrupting the individual.
Yeah.
But we're not using that. We're forcing people to go out and buy a commodity, which is raising the price of that commodity, because now it's a law, you have to have it.
Now, that's another thing. A lot of people are not going to want it and are going to fight against it just because it's being forced on.
Right. And now they're saying
that... be told what to do. You don't like to be told what to do by their parents, let alone by the president.
Exactly. And then as we find out after the fact that, well, you know, Obamacare really relied on all these young people that really are not going to use it to sign up for Obamacare. You know, he didn't say that at the beginning. There's a lot of things he didn't say in the beginning. And because a lot of young people are going, like the example I just gave, you know, back where it literally takes a two people, you know, per household to pay the bills, you know, and money's not there. They're not wasting money. There's just money's not there. And they're going, I'm, you know, 21, 23, 25 years old, in good health. I pray nothing goes wrong. I don't have the money for health insurance. It's not on the top of my list of things to buy right now. And are my employers providing it to me, you know, or whatever? Why should I go spend money for health insurance? And then we're finding out that the government was really counting on young people that won't use the insurance, or very seldom will use the insurance, and to fund it. And they're finding out that people that have chronic health problems, or older people that are using it, have signed up for it because they said you can't be turned away. You know, it's supposed to be affordable. You know, you save $2,500 a year. And here's the thing that gets me. You and I, and probably everybody listening to this program, based on what I just said, is going, like, duh, we get it.
Well, the simple fact is, young people are not going to sign up for it because they know damn good and well that if they get sick or something happens to them, they're going to go to the hospital and they're going to be covered. It's going to be taken care of. Now, they may lose something in the end. If they had any money set aside, they may lose all of their savings and that sort of thing. But the chances are the young person that's involved in this has not got any money set aside anyway. So they're not going to lose anything. They're going about it in the wrong direction. They're setting it up in the wrong way. I hate to say this, but what they should do is make it as a tax. But the thing is, we have it already as a tax.
It should be a tax, like, okay, to fund it, yes, I'll agree with you. It should be a tax, but it should be like a usage tax.
No.
A little bit more control over. Like some of the other countries, you know, if you don't buy anything, you don't spend any taxes. If you buy something, yeah, I mean, the tax rate's a little bit higher than some of the other countries, but again, you know, if you don't have any money, you're not purchasing anything. You're not being required to come up with, like in 2016, where an Obamacare comes in full effect, if you don't meet the poverty levels that they set aside, you know, the federal poverty level, you will be, per individual, at least $2,000 or 2.5% of your gross income if you do not have insurance. Or if you do have insurance, you're paying out of pocket, you know, even $500 a month, which is a figure I've heard tossed around, you know, right there is $6,000 a year just for health insurance.
Yeah.
Whether you use it or not. And some of the deductibles, one company I work for, here's an excellent example, had a $2,500 deductible before it kicked in anything. And so, basically, I couldn't go to the doctor because, yeah, I was paying, you know, my premiums for health insurance, and every time I went to the doctor, I paid the copay, but I also had to pay the full bill.
Yeah, it's the whole thing is it's completely all screwed up. And I think what's happening here is people have sort of set it aside, and sort of decided not to do anything about it yet, because Obama's not going to be there that long, and he can try very hard to make it. How do I say? He wants to make it so you can't get out of it. You can't get away with it. You can't do something and not pay for it. You're going to have to pay for it. Well, people are going to just sit back and not do it. They're going to just buy.
Or they can't do, which is my point.
Well, that's true too, but the point is they're not going to do it. They'd rather pay the fine at this particular point. In fact, the fine is sometimes cheaper than the product itself. But they'd rather pay the fine than pay for it, and because chances are you're not even going to be charged a fine.
I'll give you a scenario, okay? Because this actually happened to me back in my 20s. I've never been homeless, thank God, but I've actually been at the point where I couldn't afford to buy food, so I do know what it's like to starve. Now, here's the thing. The people go, well, we have all these services. Well, here's the problem. Okay, I was self-employed. I was delivering newspapers at the time. This is back when gas was actually somewhat affordable, and, you know, you could make $400 or $500 a month and live off that or whatever. And that's how I was making my living. You know, I was self-employed delivering newspapers, which is great. I had enough money to pay for gas, pay for insurance, have a roof over my head, and that was it. No money for food. But here's the catch-22. Yes, we have these services, but my gross income my gross income was too much to qualify for any assistance.
Yep.
And here's the thing where you run into with the health insurance. You know, you may, because they always go by your gross income, not how much you get, but your gross income, you know, even before deductions, is, I may make a lot of money gross under Obamacare, but I may make too much money to apply for the subsidies. And the subsidies, you know, you still got to pay the money out, and subsidies just kind of knocks off the total. You know, it's like a credit. And still be stuck to owe the penalties. And, again, get nothing back from my taxes because, again, the penalties. So using my scenario, fast forward to the 21st century, you know, where I can't afford even to buy food, and because, again, my gross is too much, what's a $2,000 a year penalty on top of the expenses that I'm barely just breaking even just to kind of exist, what are you going to do? And especially every year that you can't pay it, the IRS is going to charge you penalties, and then pretty soon, you know, you get up to several thousand dollars or $5,000-$6,000 in unpaid tax penalties. They're going to come after you, and you're going to be dealing with the the only thing more scarier than an IRS audit is a DOT audit. But it is, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do?
Well, basically, you do, like I say, you just don't pay them. You just keep the money yourself and use it to do whatever is necessary to live off of, and just ignore it, because sooner, you know, the point is they're going to come out. The worst they're going to do is come after you and put you in jail, and then you don't have to put out any money.
Right.
I mean, that's a lot of people say that, you know, I'll go to jail first because at least everything is covered, you know, no matter what it is. And it's just ridiculous to even think that way. But we're being forced to think that way. By our own federal government, we're being forced to think that way in some instances.
Well, that's the point. The only thing it's going to take is, out of 7 million people that they claim have signed up, out of how many people are in the U.S., would you guess?
30 million.
30 million?
That are supposed to be signed up.
Okay. So, all right, so that's a pretty large percentage that who hasn't signed up yet for whatever reason.
Well, if you want to count all the people in the United States, 400 million people in the
United States. 400 million, so that's...
The point is, the thing is, I don't even believe them when they're touting that 7 million.
No.
I really don't, because last time they said a number like that, they're not signed up. They're the people that have signed up to sign up. I don't want to put that... They've signed a little thing on the website, but the website doesn't work half the time,
right.
And so they haven't signed up for anything. They've just signed up to sign up, and not done anything, and so consequently, half of those are just nothing. They're just no. I mean, they have good intentions maybe, but maybe they don't. You know, maybe they just did that just to get them off your back.
Well, yeah, for the fear of the law, you know, and I've heard stories where people get on there, they sign up, and they look at the cost, and they go, I can't afford this.
A lot of people that way.
Yeah.
A lot of people that way.
Like I said, we were talking about this at work, and one of my coworkers is moving because he's got a family of four. And he said his utility bills are $350 a month. That's a hell of a lot of money. That's over, you know, $3,000, $4,000 a year just to supply electrical and water to your home. Because, again, like I say, most of it is taxes and stuff.
Well, a lot of it goes to pay for other things, too. they lump a lot of things in those utility bills.
Well, they do, but the whole point is you know, no matter where the money goes, still when you're in a really tight budget, that's a hell of a lot of money.
Yeah, and that's happening right here in the town that I live in, Cottage Grove. They're putting a huge amount of lumping things onto your utility bills.
Right.
And because, you know, my utility bill is over $120 a month, and it doesn't cost that much money for because that's not including electricity.
Right.
That's you know, and it just doesn't cost that much money for things unless they're just spending the money. And see, they don't have to worry about it, the city I'm talking about. They don't have to worry about it. They've got the money coming in because it just, when they send you a bill, you have to pay for it.
Right.
But
they shut you off. But my whole point is not, it's just basically what they're going to find out and what they are finding out. And this is one of the reasons why Obama and Biden and everything are out there really promoting. They're still promoting. It's already been a law, and they're still promoting the advantages of Obamacare because they know that there's a lot of discontent.
Well, they know very good and well that as soon as he's no longer in office, it's going to go away.
Right. It's the emperor not wearing any clothes, so to speak. And, you know, they know that there's a lot of people that don't like it and that they're getting a lot of resistance. That's why he made the comment about, I don't get it. Why are people working so hard to not have health insurance? Well, he gets it. It's just the whole point is, where does that money go? Does that $2,000 a year penalty, does that go to, is that spread out evenly to the insurance companies to help subsidize the other people that can't afford the insurance that are below the poverty level, or does that go into the general fund, or where does that money go?
Well, it probably goes into the general fund. I can't imagine them actually sharing it with insurance companies.
No. And how much, in fact, even with that, because one of the arguments, too, about bringing down in the cost of insurance is opening up insurance companies so they can go across state borders.
But they're not bringing down the cost of insurance.
No, that's what I'm saying, is that under Obamacare, they're not. But one of the arguments before Obamacare about bringing down the cost of insurance is because it's the way the laws are written now, and let's say recently changed because of Obamacare, you know, insurance companies were not allowed to go outside state borders. So they couldn't take somebody like in Oregon, they couldn't take somebody from Idaho, et cetera, et cetera. And so now is this national repository or whatever they're calling it, or suppository, is that opening up state's borders so that, XYZ Life can one company out of Florida provide insurance for people on the West Coast?
Well, I don't understand why you'd want to go outside of your borders unless somebody's doing it cheaper somewhere else. And if they're doing it cheaper somewhere else, then stick around because very soon someone near you is going to be doing it that cheap too.
Well, unless, of course, they put a limitation on how many insurance companies there could be out there. I mean, that's the thing is that, I mean, the insurance companies love it because, you know, basically, you know, you just pass a law requiring people to have it. And some people compare it to, well, it's like car insurance. Okay, fine. You have a choice of whether or not you own a car. If you own a car, yes, you have to have car insurance. That's the law. But there's no law that says you, Cliff, have to go out and purchase a vehicle.
Now, see, that's not true. There isn't a law that says you have to purchase a vehicle. There's the law of existence. If you want to go have a job and be able to get to that job, you need a vehicle. And consequently, I don't believe in mandatory car insurance either. I think that's should be against the law.
Well, I'll disagree with you on that because if somebody gets in an accident, they don't have insurance, you know, and especially if somebody gets hurt, somebody's going to have to pay for it.
Well, you see, that's the whole thing. It's the same thing as the insurance we're talking about now. That it's insurance, and it should be a government thing. It should be something that is done by the government and taken care of by the government. Because what's happening now is the cost of things being done, cost of hospitals, the cost of medical care, the cost of doctors, is going sky high. It's just absolutely out of control. And if they want to make it under control, they're going to have to pay for it all.
Exactly.
So, in other words, automobile insurance, regular insurance, they should be paying for all of it. and then they can put controls on how much it costs you. But then, of course, when that happens, it's a bad thing too, because then you're not going to get good care. You've got to leave the thing open so that you can buy individual insurance if you want to, because that way you can get the good care. So it's damned if you do and damned if you don't, and the government's making sure you don't.
Exactly. And by the way, with the 30 minutes remaining in the program on KRBN Internet News Talk Radio, your phone calls are welcome, 646-721-9887. One of the things that I wanted to throw out there real quick, as you're saying, like expenses, I don't know how it is in other areas, but like here in Lane County, for example, we enacted, I think about a year or 2 years ago, an extra tax on hospitals and medical devices. Well, also medical devices, also federal. But here's the thing. Health care is expensive to begin with. It's expensive, you know, just saying, whenever you go to a hospital, be careful who you say hi to. Don't, you know, especially in the hallway, because you'll get billed for it. You know, you say hi to somebody that's delivering coffee, you're going to find that on your bill. But the whole point is that, you know, $2 an aspirin, you know, from the Bayer bottle that came, you know, from the drugstore for $1.98. But the point is that things are so expensive at the hospital, now they threw a tax on top of that, just adding more to the expenses. Well, who pays for the taxes? A lot of it is, you know, the insurance companies pay for the most of it. Are the hospitals they wind up writing off a lot of you. I went through bankruptcy, for example, and what threw me into bankruptcy and threw away my good credit score was my gallbladder went out and I had to go to the hospital, and I didn't have I was in a situation like the Obamacare thing. I lost my job and I had no way to pay the bill, so I had to declare bankruptcy.
Yep. And that's an awful lot of people that are doing that. A lot of people are losing their entire monetary, anything that's saved. And that's why younger people are sitting around saying, why do I bother? Why do I want to bother to save money? Why do I want to bother to put it in the bank? Why do I want to do this? Because I'm going to get sick, and I'm going to go there, and I'm going to be covered anyway.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make any difference. And so, consequently, the idea of getting your insurance for your coverage of whatever you're going to do it's meeting on deaf ears is what it's doing, because young people are aware of what's happening. They're not sitting around doing nothing. They're not sitting around completely in la-la land. They know what's going on, and they know why. And so consequently, they also know how to get around it. And getting around it is just not bother with it.
Exactly. And apathy is real easy to do, especially if you don't know what your resources are.
Yeah.
You know, or like I said, well, here's another thing to throw on top. Okay, as young people, because they're really pushing to go to college out of high school, LCC, the Lame Community College here in the Eugene area, is really pushing hard to recruit students and, you know, start you out at, you know, the community college and go over to the University of Oregon and get your bachelor's and et cetera, et cetera. And, okay, so you go ahead and you do that, and they make it all sound attractive. The loans are easy to get. Then you graduate, say, with a bachelor's degree, and you have a $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 student loan, and which, by the way, if you declare bankruptcy, you cannot write off your student loan, your stuff.
Right.
But
that goes on and on and on.
That goes on and on and on. In fact, I'll share something in a moment, but the point is that your payments for that can be anywhere from $200, $300, $400, $500 a month on top of everything else. And the way it's set up, like, for example, my student loan, I graduated in 2006. I owe $24,000. And only the way it's set up, only $900 is went against the principal. I have a 2028 payoff date, which is a hell of a long time. And my $23,000 student loan is going to be over $40,000 by the time it's paid off for an associate's degree.
Yep.
So,
no matter who you are, that's not, you're not the only one that does it. There's a lot of people who went to school a long time ago and have not been able to pay it off in a timely manner because they lost a job or didn't have a job for a while or something of that sort. And they've got to pay that bill, and that never goes away. It is never forgiven. I don't care how many times if you declare bankruptcy or what you declare, it's never goes away. So consequently, I know someone who's paid, you know, $60,000 on a $15,000 school bill, and that's ridiculous because, you know, every time they sell it, you owe the whole thing over again.
Well, here's one for you, and I don't want to stay on student loans and stuff like that because I could literally do, you know, a 3-hour program on it, and on education. But they say that a very small percentage of people that go in and get a degree for one thing actually get a job in what they went and got the degree for. So the thing is knowing that going into it is like go in and get a degree in art and video games, knowing that, you know, yeah, you'll have a bachelor's degree in this. You're not going for that type of job, but you'll have a degree, you know.
I've been on job searches or job when they ask you, do you have a bachelor's degree? Do you have a degree? And you say yes. They don't ask you in what.
Exactly.
They don't ask you anything about it. Just you have one. And like you say, it can be in ditch digging, and you still have it, and that's all that counts.
Well, I have a friend of mine. He's an engineer for a major company. He's been there for like 35 years. He's got a bachelor's degree, but it's in broadcasting.
Yeah. Yeah. See, I don't have a bachelor's degree in broadcasting, but that's what I've done all my life.
And but see, still silly me, I got my degree in computer networking because I kind of assumed that when I went into that, and I'm going to change subjects here because I don't want to go on this so that I could, like I said, talk for 3 hours. I went in there seriously wanting, because I love computers. I programmed them ever since PCs first came out.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I had the opportunity to go back to school full time and I wanted to get a career in computers. So I logically figured that I would go to school for computers to get a degree in computers to get a job. See where I'm going with this?
Mm-hmm.
In computers.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever gotten a job in computers?
I wound up truck driving. Which, by the way, cost you $4,000 to go to school for 30 days to be able to qualify for a truck driver, which I made more money doing that than I had in any other jobs that I've held.
Even after you paid your $4,000?
Even after I paid my $4,000. I mean, as far as return on investment, ROI. But the whole point was, is that, you know, yeah, I could have gone through University of Oregon, which I, never mind, and, you know, racked up more in student debt. And still,
the thing is, our educational system is all screwed up because, you know, it costs you more and more and more money to get an education, and it shouldn't. There should be a possibility of getting some job right out of high school, and otherwise,
not just that. It should be the checks and balances. When you look at the fact, okay, I said I don't want to spend too much time on this. Okay, like to qualify to earn my associate's degree at Lane Community College, or LAME Community College as I call it, you are required to have 3 terms of PE at your expense, or 1 credit classes. You're required to take human relations at work, which is a 4 credit class, and other classes similar to that, because, one, they're concerned about your health. 2, they want you to be a more well-rounded person. That's the whole purpose about that class, and there's a lot of time taken away from everything else for it, along with a whole bunch of similar courses in related to that. 1/3 of my classes that I took were even closely related to what my degree is for.
Well, you know, I hate to say it, but I bet you that you could have probably gotten through without having any classes in PE. You know, do you think that class in PE did anything towards keeping you healthy?
The only thing that it did, because I took tennis and found out that even as a a 50-year-old person, I could still whip them, the younger people. But other than that, but it took time off my studies. It cost me, it was one credit class, you know, but I take 3 credits of it. You know, it cost me the amount of money for the course. It cost me college credits, which student loans count against you if you have too many college credits. And that's the other thing that, I ran into a problem with, because Lane and University of Oregon do what's called lifetime credits. So even though I went to college in 1975, earned 90 credits, the businesses I worked for in the past offered college credit courses related to the job. I've taken college credit courses on my own. All of that counted against my student loans. No matter how they were paid, they all counted against my student loans.
Yep. Yep.
And so, but anyways, like I said, I didn't want to go in that on this.
Our educational system is really, I mean.
You're not getting your value for, and if you want to really piss off an instructor, and I did this one time, is I went up to them and I reminded them that I am paying you for a service. In fact, I went, and I wish more people would do this. I had problems with an instructor because, I mean, I tell you the attitude, on the very first day, she walked up and down that blackboard and I said, students, your job is to please me. No, your job is to educate me. So we butted heads, and because she was just one of those type of teachers that shouldn't be teaching, and I switched over to a different instructor that taught the same course, and she wasn't much better, and trying to play catch-up cost me, got me behind my other courses. And so I was forced to drop out of that course, but it was beyond the refund part. And it's like, $450 per course. And so they were saying, well, you're beyond your trial or whatever, and, sucks to be you. And I got to thinking about that, and I says, bullshit. I'm not going to throw away $450 just because these guys have an attitude. And so I challenged it. And I got the backing of the department head, and he says, well, good luck. And I said, well, so I filled out the forms, and I put on there very bluntly, he says, I'm going to give you guys a choice. This instructor has not only cost me $450, but has also cost me to get behind my other courses, and I may not pass the term because of playing catch-up, et cetera, et cetera. He says, I'm going to give you guys a choice. You guys choose how to play it. I want my $450 back, or we're going to go for at least the refund for the whole term plus damages. You choose how you want to play it. I got my $450 back. But the whole point was, if more people would insist that, that you are paying for service, you're not going to put up with the BS that they're offering. You're going to pay for the service. You're going to get quality from it. Like, for example, the 1 and 2 credit courses give you more homework than a 4 credit course. Well, I befriended a teacher there, and I found out why. Because those teachers, the one with 10 years, they get the pick of the course, and that's how they get paid, is how many credits that they're teaching. So they get the pick of the course. And so these people that, like the part-time instructors and whatnot, that wound up with the 1 and 2 credit classes, they purposely bury you in hopes that you will complain, so that the administrator will look at these courses and go, well, this 1 credit or 2 credit course, maybe it should be a 3 credit course. And so it's a game.
Yeah. Yeah, it is for them.
Or they don't take the course seriously. The one part of the computer course, which was actually the hardware end of it, we had like maybe 1 week of this is a processor, this plugs into that, and that was the end of that. The rest were just kind of like just show up and have donuts.
Well, I can see that. I can. The reason for that is because you can study it for a month and 2 months, and by the time you're through studying it, it's changed.
Well, it's not that. It's that there's a lot to a computer and to a computer network system, but when the instructor is not taking the course seriously and not making a reasonable effort to teach the course, like I said, literally, it's a you plug this in, let's go have coffee. And, I don't care if you show up or not, I'll just give you all a passing grade. Except for being a course requirement, why in the hell are you showing up? I mean, I got, you know, a bunch of homework in the 200 level math classes that I could be spending time on and not wasting my money and time.
Really? Did many people not show up?
Attendance was pretty bad, especially when I went to the University of Oregon. They were constantly talking about people who wouldn't show up for classes. In fact, not only attendance issues was really a big deal, but also there were plagiarism and cheating was also a huge deal in there. And I'm thinking, especially in the universities, like, you know, we're supposed to kind of like be somewhat like adults. And the way I look at it, if you're a student and you decide that you want to, if you want to cheat for better grades, fine, you're not going to learn anything. If you don't want to show up and you want to throw the money away, fine, that's your decision.
But you see, that's the thing is, it can work to your benefit. Because remember, when you go to school, the chances of you getting a job in that particular subject are very slow.
Yeah.
Very, very minimal. So you can cheat and do whatever you want to, but it's not going to make any difference because you're not going to go to work in that particular industry anyway.
Do you realize that, you know, I mean, I did work in the computer industry for about 14 months after I graduated. It's not exactly what I wanted to do, which was answering phones, you know, being in a phone bank, which is really the only, you know, except for side jobs that I did on my own, the only paid position I got after I graduated, and there's a big story on that one. I have not had to show my degree to anybody, even in jobs that require a degree.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's like I say, you know, you can go ask for the job, and when they ask you the question, do you have this or do you have that, they don't ever require you to show it.
No.
I've never had to show a degree or even a hint of one in my job. Now, I have at times taken my degree with me and plunked it down on the desk in front of them, like it or not, but they didn't care. Nobody cared.
Yeah. No. So you work hard, you get those good grades, you get, you know, you wind up on the dean's list, you got a 4-foot grade point average, you go do all that hard work, nobody cares.
Nobody cares. Nobody cares. Well, in the first place, one of the things, like I say, again, it goes back to the idea of the chances of you getting a job in your stated field is pretty low anyway.
Right.
So when you go up and you have your degree there, and you take and show your degree in ditch digging, and you go up and apply for a job, and the job has nothing to do with digging ditches, you're not accomplished anything anyway. So why did they ask for it? They don't.
Exactly. And like one person said, it was actually a talk show host, but made a good point, is that he has an intern that is in his mid-50s, and he's got a college degree, you know, because the only way you can be an intern is to be in college. And he says, basically, the only thing that degree has offered this guy is the privilege of bringing him coffee.
Yeah.
And,
yep.
You know, giving him an opportunity for entry-level position into the field.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that's frustrating is that, you know, like I say, you come out with a bachelor's degree with $200-$300 a month in student loans, and you're lucky to find a job, again, starting out, you know, that pays $13 an hour. And it requires a bachelor's degree.
Yep. Yeah, well, nowadays, see, to me, $13 an hour sounds like a lot. But then I stopped, I quit work. I stopped working back when, even then it was not very much. But I never thought about, see, I never had a job by the hour. I never had a job where I was paid by the hour. I was paid by the month and by what I did and so on and so forth.
Right.
So, that's the kind of thing I did. I worked a position where I was only went to work. I went to work at 6 o'clock in the morning. And I got home at noon, and that's all I did. And I didn't work all that time. I mean, I worked nearly part of that time. But the thing is, I didn't care if I went to work at 10 o'clock in the morning and got home at 11. I'd get paid the same amount of money.
Right.
So that's I never had a job where I worked by the hour.
Well, speaking of since we got talking in school, and I didn't really want to go that way. 10 minutes remaining in the program, 646-721-9887, if you'd like to join us on this or any other topic. And again, I'd like to remind people that if you are listening to us, if you're one of the thousands of people each week that listens to us on the archives, you can send us an email, talk@caribbeanradio.com, if you'd like to participate. And also, we'd like to also know when you listen to the program, which helps us demographically, schedule our shows to better suit our listening public. And there's a thing that in the news lately, and I haven't heard about it, but apparently until recently, and but it's becoming a real big issue. And speaking of education, it's called Common Core, and it's apparently part of the standards, those standards, and it's running into a lot of resistance. And part of the reason for that is what it's actually forcing our kids to learn. And now, Cliff, before we talked about it in our pre-show, you didn't know about it, right?
I've never heard of it, and now that I have heard of it, I'm only going to get mad talking about it. So I'm very upset about it.
Exactly.
See, we have so many things that our educational system is doing other than educating people.
Right.
They're not educating people. They're trying to come up with different ways to make things. They're trying to make it so that the parents cannot be involved in the school. They cannot be involved in the kids' education because they're doing something that we'd never heard of. And this thing is ridiculous, just totally ridiculous.
Exactly. I'll give you an example. It's like, in fact, if you want to check out this website, it's mom.com/common-core-is-making-me-stupider. If you want to see this example here. Typically, like when Cliff and I went to school, to add simple numbers together, like 354 plus 291, in typical format, you stack one on top of the other, and, four plus one is five, nine plus five is 14, four carry the one, three plus three is six, 45, to get your answers as simple as that. But here's the way they want you to do it. Same question. You would take and round off 354 to 300, the 291 to 200, then you add those two together, which would equal 500. So it says the estimated sum is 500. The answer is 645 is reasonable. So you still got to add the 54 and the 91 together in the format that I just did, but you just took it to a very confusing step. And they don't, in this example, they don't say...
Well, the answer isn't right. The answer is not right. It's not correct. The whole thing, the hypothesis of the question is not even correct. You can't do it that way. Numbers are a very precise thing. And you can't say, oh, well, it's close to 300, so, well, that's good enough.
Right.
That's not good enough. You go to the store and you give them a check for $654 and they give you $300 in change, and it's supposed to be 354, you're not going to be happy, not at all.
Exactly.
And numbers are that way. Math is that way. You don't round things off. You don't say, well, that's reasonable. It's reasonable that you'd be upset because you didn't get it. Bullshit.
Exactly. And to come up and say, well, the answer is 645 is reasonable, that's not reasonable. That's the frickin' answer.
Well, it's not only not reasonable, it's like you say, it's the answer.
Yeah.
But the idea to consider it reasonable, if you're not getting that, is not reasonable. In other words, you didn't, nowhere did you get $300, it didn't work. It isn't right.
In their example, no, because they're saying that the sum of 500, or the estimated sum of 500, being the fact that they rounded off to hundreds, and then the answer is 645 is reasonable. So they're causing you extra work to come up with the same answer.
In the first place, you don't round off hundreds that way. You know, it was 695 or 395 or 295 or something like that. That isn't rounded off.
Yeah, 364 and 291.
Okay, 291.
Right.
291 is not rounded off to 200. It's rounded off to 300.
Right.
I mean, that's everybody knows that.
Well, that's if you're rounding up. But what they're doing is they're just taking the hundreds part and adding the hundreds together. You know, again, let me repeat this.
I understand what you're saying, I'm saying that's not right. That's
right.
Not an answer. That's not possibly even a question. That should not be included in the school system. that we should be, any teacher that's teaching that and any school system that's teaching that should be put in jail.
Right.
Everybody involved in it should be put in jail.
The way they're requiring the teachings now.
But that's not going to help. That's going to hurt our, we wonder what's wrong with our students. Our students are far down on the, we used to be tops in the school system. But then they start doing things like this, and of course we're going to fall behind because it isn't right. It isn't a possibility. It isn't even logical. It just is not supposed to happen. And consequently, if we're going to let it happen, maybe we would do a show on this because we should be going out and trying to get people to rally against this. This should be against the law to teach that sort of a thing because that is not even close to being a possibility in real life. I mean, supposedly we're teaching our kids a way to get along in life. Well, that is not it. That's going to get them in more trouble than it's going to you could possibly imagine.
Well, that's the thing, because this has recently come out and getting national attention, and as people are actually starting to, you know, realize this. Like, for example, I saw a video that somebody put together where they were testifying in front of city council, and they handed a city council member copies of one of these homeworks, and they said, okay, well, what's the answer? And they were wrong. And they said, well, according to, you know, the way that they're supposed to do this under the Common Core, this is your answer, but that answer is wrong. And it was a very simple question, just like this one here is, you know, again, find, and the way that they ask the question is, and let me read the question, find the sum, use front-end estimation to check that each answer is reasonable. Not that it's precise, but is reasonable.
Math is not a reasonable thing.
No.
Math is a precise thing.
Unless you get into imaginary numbers, which is actually a real thing.
No. Imaginary numbers don't count. They're imaginary. And so consequently, they're not real, and consequently, they're not part of the math job position.
I took Math 65 when we got into imaginary numbers, and when the instructor started doing that, and he asked me what the answer was, and I said, do you want me to give you an imaginary answer as well? Because I thought he was kidding. He wasn't. But italic I is a symbol for it, and two imaginary numbers added together equal a real number. I don't know. It's stupid. I guess somebody had a lot of time on their hands.
If you're working with imaginary numbers, the answer is imaginary also. And so consequently, it isn't possible. You can't work with imaginary numbers. You have to work with real numbers.
Well, that's what I was saying. I think if you also had an imaginary paycheck for all these imaginary questions, and if I'd get an imaginary grade.
Yeah.
I didn't make any points that day.
Well, too bad. You made it with me.
Yes. And speaking of, I hope we made it with you, because we'll be back again next Saturday, 4 p.m. Pacific time, so I hope you'll join us again. Check us out on Facebook. Facebook.com/KRBN Radio, and send us email talk@KRBN.com. See you next week, same time.
All right. Have a good day.
Be sure to check us out on the internet at www.krbnradio.com or email us with your show ideas at talk@krbnradio.com. This is KRBN Internet News Talk Radio.